this film? Because when somebody's just telling me about this, you know, submarine sinking off China in 1931, I'm going, yeah, you sure this is a bloody documentary? Yeah. But it's an amazing story. Can you give us a bit of a background to how you first got involved in this and what the Poseidon actually was?
Well, I got involved because late in 2008, I got a call from an old friend of mine called Stephen Schwenker, who's an American author and scuba instructor in Beijing. He actually teaches people to dive in one of the aquariums in Beijing. And he told me he had an interesting story he was working on. He was thinking of possibly turning it into a book. And would I like to come along for an initial sort of scouting trip to Weihai in Shandong province in east of Beijing? And I thought, well, maybe it's going to work out. So I went along. And what hooked me into the story, I think what had brought Stephen in initially, was the sense of something that had happened, you know, 8 decades ago in 1931, the sinking of a submarine and the mystery of why it went down. And then the initial spur to it being famous, which was that 5 men had managed to escape from the submarine from 40 meters down under the water. And that was the first time anyone had ever escaped using scuba-style equipment, which had just really been invented a couple of years before. And so the guys who got out, the 5 of them who got out, were instantly hailed as heroes for pioneering escape techniques. And a lot of what was learned from them getting out to do with the bends, decompression sickness, and the issues of trying to get out of something at depth underwater feed into scuba diving even today and our understanding of what it means to be underwater for a long time. So it seemed particularly resonant as an idea. And secondly was the idea that there was all this had happened. They were front page heroes back in 1931 on the front page of the New York Times and the Daily Mirror in England ran a series of stories. The Daily Mail even raised money for one of the guys to buy a house when he got back to England. It was a big story. But the idea that something so big at that time could have been completely forgotten and yet still, as we thought at the time, still be there out in the water, you know, 20 miles off the coast. So it's kind of extraordinary. And why would no one go and look at it? What, you know, and plus there were 19 men died on board, so it seemed like a particularly poignant story to go back and tell. And of course, once Stephen started looking at what had happened, and then what had happened, you know, 40 years later, in the middle of the Cultural Revolution, when the Chinese government became interested in the wreck, and what they went subsequently to do with it, just seemed to make it one of those stories where you think, like, there's no way we can't tell it now. It has to be told as a story.
Yeah, 1971 would have been a good year for anybody trying to salvage anything. Because I can't imagine anybody organizing anything in 1971, let alone diving down to that depth to whip up a submarine. It was just amazing.
Well, yes, I mean, there are various reasons, and some of them we touch on in the film. I mean, there's obviously political reasons why China wouldn't have wanted a foreign wreck off their coast, or at least, let's say, getting rid of it off the coast might have created a sort of buzz of nationalism that would have helped drive support for the government. But there are some other practical reasons. You know, it's a huge chunk of metal, and of course in the 70s, just like in the 50s, there was a big drive to output production of metal for industrial agricultural machinery and things like that. So there were reasons why it made sense for them to do it at that time. And the other big reason, of course, was about salvaging just for its own sake, because China in the 60s and 70s was developing its own submarine fleet, and specifically a nuclear submarine fleet. And whereas you perhaps might be able to leave diesel-electric submarines on the bottom of the ocean, you certainly can't leave nucleus down there. So if you're going to start working with high-technology submarines, you have to know how to retrieve them.
Yes, there is nothing worse than just leaving a nice hot reactor somewhere off the coast of China. Yeah, you like three-eyed fish lately? So, Arthur, why are you in China? What's brought you to China?
It's such a long time now. I've been here for 16, going on 17 years now. So it's a long story. And it, in a roundabout way, it kind of has to do with films. I was supposed to be going to film school in the mid-90s after leaving university, and initially to be a screenwriter. And instead, I decided to take a year out and come to China to sort of build up some life experience, as the cliche goes. And so I came to China for a year and then went back to the UK thinking that I was going to go back to film school, but instead was persuaded by friends and other, you know, and family that maybe putting some more time in China, getting my Chinese better, might work. And especially when people asked me, you know, what was happening or what was I doing, it was starting to get interesting around that time. Mid-90s was a really exciting time to be in China. And several people said to me, well, could you make films in China, or could you be involved in films or writing? And I thought, well, I'll give it a go, instead of rushing into working perhaps in London or somewhere. And so that was the beginning of that happening. And initially, I was a journalist for a few years. I helped set up the Dats magazine chain franchise. And after that, I became a correspondent for Variety, the Hollywood film magazine, and gradually moved back in towards filmmaking and working with documentary makers. And that's how it happened. And then our first documentary, a film called A Farewell Song, about a group of retired Chinese traditional musicians who got back together to form a new sort of independent touring ensemble. That film was quite well received, and it led to us working in more production, doing, you know, commercial work and TV commercials and things like that. So it's one of those cases where you sort of get on the you get on the horse and it starts running faster and faster until you can't get off finally.
So you've been in China for quite a long time, and you've put the Poseidon Project together, but was that hard going? Because I find that doing anything in China is quite often very hard going.
Mm. Well, there are certain... It's like anything. You know, anyone who's lived in China for any length of time, and in fact Chinese people as well who have experience of other countries, discover this thing that I think people outside China don't know. People outside China sometimes think everything must be very difficult here and very controlled. But in fact, it's a curious mix, is China, of things that are controlled, that we know are off limits, or areas that are difficult to touch on, or types of working that are difficult to do. And then incredible freedom, a sort of sense of just the sheer joy of doing things that perhaps haven't been done before here, the sense of experimentation and pioneering. And people sometimes who aren't, maybe in my particular sphere, people who aren't perhaps as media savvy as people you might find, say interviewees you might find in European countries or America. And so there's a kind of lovely sense of innocence. You know, you can interview people and it feels like genuinely the first time they've ever been spoken to. And there's a sort of, it creates a real buzz when you're filming. You know, there's places you still feel nobody's put a camera in. I mean, I don't mean that they're in the deepest, darkest jungle. I just mean that no one's sort of paid any interest in them yet. And so when you take the camera there and you start talking to people, it feels like you're doing it for the first time, whereas there's very little places where it feels like that. I assume that's been a long time in say, England. And stories as well. There's just amazing stories here that you don't feel like you're competing with other directors or production companies to tell, because there's so many stories and so few of us doing what we do here.
Did you run into any really terrible problems putting this together? Did you ever get to a point where somebody just said, no, you can't film this, you can't do that, you can't talk to these people?
There are those occasions. You know, we sort of met a couple of those in filming up in Shandong. Though, to be honest, I mean, I don't want to be an apologist for the way it works, but I mean, it is not simple filming in London these days.
True.
Take your camera out.
Not simple filming anywhere.
That's right.
Sometimes you just feel like China is a little bit more or less simple.
That's right. Well, in other ways, you know, you there's that that sort of buzz, like I say, that sort of sense that you're doing it for the first time. Yes, somebody might tell you not to film somewhere, and you might say, well, this is to do this being China and this being sensitive. But at the same time, there's lots of places in lots of countries where you're not allowed to film. Some of them nothing to do with sensitivity, just you're not allowed to film there because they want, you know, £50,000 for you to take the camera out in that particular spot.
Yeah.
So we work this way all over the world. We don't just film in China. You know, we work in lots of countries too, especially on commercial work. And that's always the case, that there are restrictions on where you film and who you film and what you film. And so I don't feel it's particularly... I don't feel it particularly here. I guess the one thing that we have found on this project is that and this is a curious sort of paradox of the film, is that if anyone should feel bad, if any country, I'm not talking about any individuals,
yeah,
should feel bad about the Poseidon story or feel awkward about the history, I guess it would be Britain. This touches on the end of empire. There's a very simple question you could ask of Britain, which is, what were you even doing in China? You know, why were you here? And essentially, Britain was here protecting assets, and was part of the balance of power between Russia and France and Japan and so on. But it's not a particularly noble history, though. Of course, I'm not suggesting any blame attached to any of the submariners, for example, who were all just working men doing a job and doing the best they could, and looking after each other. But there is that sense of a colonial history. And yet when we went back to tell that story and tell the what we viewed as an interesting moment in history in the 70s during the Cultural Revolution, when the submarine was salvaged by the Chinese Salvage Bureau, it was the Chinese that were really sensitive about that. It was mostly, and when I say the Chinese, of course, I mean the authorities were somewhat sensitive about that issue. And it hadn't been... Britain hadn't been informed about it happening. But then again, you look back at the history and you say, that's sort of understandable. That was a very sensitive time. There were no diplomatic relations between Britain and China in the early 70s. And of course, Britain was really one of the enemies at that point. And so it's not surprising that things were done in secret. No one was killed. It was an act of... a breach of protocol, is what you could probably call it. No reason to be excessively... sensitive about it. Though it's understandable that the families of the Poseidon dead, those who didn't make it out, would be sensitive about it, of course. That's absolutely natural. But when I don't view it as a major sort of diplomatic incident. And overall in the story, if any country was to be, as I say, to feel somewhat shameful about the history, it would be Britain. And yet Britain, of course, has records that are completely open and very easy to find, whereas in China... it's very hard to find those records, and it's very high, it's hard to get an official response to the history. So it's a sort of weird situation where sensitivities about history make things harder to tell as a story than perhaps they ought to be, especially when there's no blame being apportioned.
Yes, you're right. It's not a time for finger pointing, really.
The 70s is you know, it's 40 odd years ago now, and it was a very different time in China, and none of the same people are in any position of authority. And what did they do? They salvaged the submarine. It's perhaps, as I say, not the best thing to do in terms of the sensibilities of the family and how they might be hurt by that. But it's not a massive tragedy or involving death or injury.
Well, as I explained to someone else, it's not like they sank the damn thing in the first place.
That's
and
right.
Then salvaged it.
That's right. And of course, that was the other aspect. The accident itself was, though there were a few conspiracy theories around at the time in 1931, largely because the captain of the SS Utah, the merchant ship that crashed into Poseidon, was a Japanese guy, and there were some concerns that maybe there was some, it was an act of sabotage or something. On investigation, the Navy, the Admiralty, concluded that it was essentially just human error, and it was mostly the fault of the captain of Poseidon.
Yeah. Now, Arthur, you work with your brother. How did you talk your brother into coming to China?
Well, he came out. He came into film from a slightly different background. He was studying fine arts and did a lot of video work around the same time I came out to China. And so he went a slightly different path and did design and things like that and kept up doing video works of art, film, if you like. In the early days of talking about doing our first film, A Farewell Song, Luther was would come out from time to time to be involved to do some filming on that, and we co-directed it in the end. And so from around 2001, he would come out to China occasionally. And over time, we'd get commercial work as well, where I'd bring him out as a cameraman or a co-director or as a pure director on a job. And eventually, we got a big project, which was the Special Olympics in 2007, the year before the Beijing Olympics. Shanghai held the Special Olympics. And he came out for that and stayed longer and ended up not going back. So then his family moved out as well. So he's been here for 6 or 7 years as well now, and has been involved in production and design since then.
Is Shanghai emerging as somewhere for fine arts and filmmakers to go? Is it now becoming an art center in its own right?
Shanghai is a curious place, because if you looked in the 90s, a lot of people would say to me, if you want to do film, why aren't you in Beijing? And for a while I thought about, and I have friends who studied at Beijing Film Academy, and I thought about doing the same thing. But it was a different dynamic in Beijing, and it was somewhat competitive in an interesting way. It was also very art-based, so there was very much an art focus. And maybe my background was a little bit more to do with writing and journalism. And so I saw Shanghai as being a place where, as long as we could raise the funds to do things, we could get it done effectively and not be stepping on other filmmakers' toes and things. I always sort of liked the idea of being a bit of an outlier in an area where not too many people were doing it. Of course, Shanghai had the Shanghai Film Studios, and they were at that point making about 20 films a year, so there was a filmmaking base here. And of course, Shanghai is really the original base of filmmaking in China. The first films, certainly the first film industry, was in Shanghai and not in Beijing. So it felt like it was a place with great history. But what's kept me making films here, I suppose, is the sense in which, yes, you are independent. Yes, you are away from any established film industry now, because Shanghai really now doesn't have a strong film base, and Beijing's much stronger. Having said that, you have to be really independent here. You have to raise your own funds. You have to, and there are people who are around with money who are looking to put things into films. And there's a sort of independent spirit of raising the funds, putting the team together, and getting it done here. And now I look at Beijing and my friends in Beijing who are filmmakers, they've sort of had to mirror that somewhat. Back in the 90s, people were just grabbing cameras and running around and shooting very, very low-budget things in Beijing, and you had to admire the spirit, and some of the films were great. But I think it's that sense, particularly in the world of documentaries, where you're not looking at large film studios giving you backing, that independent spirit, that sense of, I'm going to pull together what funds I need to make this, I'm going to make it as good as it can be, is sort of... Shanghai feels like the natural home for that, in some ways more than Beijing.
So what's next for the Jones brothers?
Well, we don't do every project together, but we've got a few that are coming up. The problem with documentaries is they're such a slow burn. You start, you come up with an idea, and maybe 2 years later you get some funding to make it. So there's always two or three projects that we have, prepped to go. And we've got a couple right now. One's a medical mystery that involves a member of my family and an interesting medical scandal. Yes, I can't say more on that.
No, because it would give the game away.
That's right. And the other one is a story. Another one that we're working on right now is a story about a British DJ in Shanghai and his. Quick rise to fame in China, incredible rise to fame, really, and his attempt now to take fame created in China and out into the world and see if it's possible to make it in China as a foreigner and then take that fame and see if it can be applied, see if you can make it globally.
Interesting idea. Arthur, if people want to find out more about the Poseidon Project, is there somewhere they can go and get information about where screenings and things are coming up?
Yeah, I mean, we're very active on social media. If you search for Poseidon Project on Twitter or on Facebook, you'll find our profiles there. And the more the merrier. Join us there, because there's a great conversation going on, especially on Facebook, about the project. And we're still finding family members of Poseidon crew even now who turn up, mainly through the social media. But the best single central base for the whole film is the website, which is PoseidonProjectFilm.com.
Yeah. Well, look, Arthur, it's been marvelous talking to you this morning. And look, good luck getting all the distribution for this, because it damn well deserves it. It's about time that we had these sorts of films getting a bit better release beyond, you know, basically being handed around on the internet.
Well, we are. The other thing to say is we are playing at festivals. So yeah. we're just playing it. We've just finished at Oaxaca in Mexico. We played at Hoboken earlier this year, and we've got another screen coming up in Washington State next month, and hopefully the UK premiere later this year. And then in Asia, we're playing in Bangkok and Singapore and Hong Kong in November, and I think in December. There's more screenings being announced all the time, and we'll certainly keep people updated on the. On the website and the newsletter you can sign up to on there as well.
Well, Arthur, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.